Morning, Council. Our next case is A24-0016, in a matter of the welfare of the children of ASJ parent. While you are setting up, you likely already know this. Each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. When you start your principal argument, please state your name and a party you represent for the record. There's an audio recording being made of this argument, and it will appear on our website later today or tomorrow. And that's the only recording that is permitted. The podium toggles up and down by a toggle switch at your waist. And counsel for appellant, when you are ready, we're ready for you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brooke Beskow-Warg, and I represent appellant father ASA in this appeal of the order transferring custody of his child to her maternal grandmother. Father is asking this court to reverse the transfer of custody order and remand to the district court. There are two primary issues in this appeal. The first is whether the district court abused its discretion when it determined the department made reasonable efforts as to father. The second interrelated issue is whether, in light of the district court's erroneous determination that the department made reasonable efforts, whether the district court abused its discretion in weighing the relevant factors for the transfer of custody, and in its ultimate decision to deny father's request to transfer custody of his daughter to himself, and instead to transfer custody to the maternal grandmother.
Counsel, it seems to me in reading the briefs and accompaniments that the key factor here has to do with the, about a 5-6 month delay from July 28th, 2022 to January 18th of 2023?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is there any question whether or not the father brought up the request for to be considered as a placement in July?
I don't think there's really any question in the record. There is an email in the SSIS notes, and the department caseworker at trial did note that she received that email. Father had made a call to the department, albeit it was the wrong individual, because there are many people who are working in the department. And he did request at that time that he wanted to be a placement option for his child. There was an email submitted to the caseworker, the ongoing caseworker on the case, detailing that information. And I believe that the caseworker testified as much that she ultimately did receive that email.
When would that have been?
That was shortly after, I believe the email was submitted to her the same day or forwarded to her on the same day that it was received.
But are we talking about July of 22 or January of 23?
July of 22. When he initially made contact with the department, which was the end of July. And he did ask the individual that he spoke with to be a placement option. He directed my client to the caseworker. The email was also forwarded to the caseworker at that time. Even if father did not say he wanted to be a placement option, it wasn't his obligation to do that. The caseworker needed to assess father. She needed to do what she needed to do under the law in order to make that assessment to determine whether he wanted to be a placement option and then proceed accordingly. So it wasn't his obligation regardless, but it was in the record that he did ask to be a placement option right away when he made contact.
Can you talk to me about the communications with father between that date and then January? Were there, I believe there were communications with the social worker, I believe, and if you could speak to this, please, are there review hearings, et cetera? Were there opportunities to come down and appear at court? Did father take advantage of that? Was he informed of that? Talk to me about sort of what was happening there, because I don't believe that father appeared until January.
And, Your Honor, I believe that is correct. The record and my understanding of it is that there were multiple communications between father and the caseworker from between July, the end of July, when he initially made that contact, and in January when he first appeared at a hearing. According to the record, the caseworker testified that she was telling Father he needed to come to these hearings. She was sending him information so that he could log in remotely for a Zoom hearing, and that didn't happen. However, Father always called after hearings for updates on what was going on, what was happening with his child, and inquiring about her well-being and sort of what was going on with the case is my understanding of that. Again, regardless of whether he was showing up at the hearings, the county has an obligation to assess Father, to determine whether he's willing and capable of being a placement option. And if they determine that he is not capable of being a placement option, they need to provide him a meaningful case plan that allows him to work on any issues to allow him to safely parent the child. That didn't happen here until March of 2023, months after he had made initial contact with the department.
And it was, March... Did the district court order it in January that an assessment be made, or was that not ordered till March?
In January, the court ordered that the department assess Father. The order was continued in March at the next hearing to assess Father. My understanding from the record is that the department made an assessment of Father somewhere in January, between January and March. However, it's concerning that at that point, the department had already determined it was going to file a petition to transfer custody to the maternal grandmother. They hadn't meaningfully engaged with Father. They hadn't meaningfully created a case plan, and they'd already determined their outcome for the case. This is not what is supposed to happen under the law. It's directly contrary to the law, and it is a failure of the department to make reasonable efforts as to Father.
Well, aren't they supposed to engage in concurrent placement planning, though? So how?
Yes.
So does the statute actually prohibit, setting aside the issues of whether the county complied with the requirements to assess and assist Father, did that petition with respect to the maternal grandmother violate the statute?
So Your Honor is absolutely correct. Concurrent permanency planning is also required under the law, but that does not mean that even if the department has a placement in mind, a placement they think might ultimately work for the child or the children, that they don't have to engage with a non-custodial parent, a non-custodial father at the same time. Under the reasonable effort statute 260.012, I believe it's E, one of the subs, it talks about the requirement of the department to make reasonable efforts, and in this case, diligent efforts as part of permanency planning to work with the non-custodial parent. That didn't happen here as it should have. So certainly, they can be talking to grandmother about the possibility of permanency with her, but they also need to be engaging Father to determine whether he is a suitable permanency option. And the fact that they maybe decide that or believe that a different permanency option is in the best interest of the children, say, which seems to have happened here, does not mean they do not need to follow the requirement to engage the non-custodial parent. And that's the main issue here.
And then you do, though, acknowledge that sometime between January and March an assessment was made. Do you know when? I'm wondering what an assessment means and when you think the assessment occurred. Because then I think your argument is more about that it was untimely and didn't give enough time with the efforts in order to achieve what he needed to achieve to be fairly considered, right? I mean, it's a timing thing almost.
Yeah, it really is a timing thing. I think there is also a question of whether the department actually assessed whether Father could be a suitable placement option when they've already filed a permanency petition.
Did the district court conclude that an assessment was made? I mean, it seems like a credibility, like you're suspicious about the sincerity of it, right?
Yes.
Is that something that how does that factor into our review?
So certainly the court can't review credibility determinations and that type of issue. I think the issue here really comes back to what Your Honor was explaining. It's the time, right? It's the timeliness of when this occurred. We've had a father who is making contact, having communications with the department, has expressed interest in his child and wanting to be part of his child's life. And the department sort of ignores that, sets it aside, and continues on with a different permanency option that it appears to have determined was going to be the final outcome. And so by the time we get an order from the court saying you need to assess this father, and then a later order adding case plan elements to what was at the beginning a very minimal case plan, it was basically making contact or maintaining contact with the department and signing releases of information, we have very little time for father to actually engage in a meaningful case plan that is supposed to have happened much sooner in the case. I think it underscores the importance of doing this in a timely manner because we are working on a timeline. The permanency petition needed to be filed. There are multiple orders leading up to the final order showing that the permanency petition needed to be filed about May 14th or May 15th, 2023, which is when it was filed. With that in mind, we need to be working as fast as we can at the beginning to assess all of our permanency options so that we have all of them on the table, we have all the information, we've given everyone an opportunity that they are required to have under the law in order to make any changes that need to be made to be a suitable permanency option.
Counsel, would you address, the court had ordered, in terms of the case plan, parenting education, mental health assessment, chemical health assessment, and then eventually found that the appellant had not completed domestic violence programming or parenting education, and court was concerned appellant didn't possess the skills needed to safely parent the children. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand timing is part of this, but isn't that fairly conclusive on the part of the court?
Your Honor, I don't know if I understand your question.
No, my point is it came late, but it came. The court had a case plan, reviewed the case plan, felt that it hadn't addressed the issues. I understand you thinking that, in a sense, the fix was in here, that the grandmother was always going to get the children, the child, because it had the other children in part, and that they were late to get to consideration of your client. But they eventually did, and then essentially rejected it for the reasons that they gave. Can you address the reasons they rejected it?
So if I'm understanding the question correctly, the court had concerns about whether father had completed what he needed to complete. There was no question that he was engaged. The caseworker testified as much, said yes, he's engaging and compliant with his case plan. However, the court basically determines that he, at that moment, cannot be a suitable placement option for this child because he has not corrected the conditions that essentially put us in this position to begin with. However, father didn't have the time to correct those conditions. I don't know how he, in the short amount of time he was allotted, was supposed to correct all of the conditions that the court imposed at such a late time.
So you're answering my question essentially, is the timing is part of that as well?
I think timing is absolutely a huge part of it. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
It's the time period up till trial, September, right? That he didn't. I mean, there was time up until September
to complete the services. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
May, but September. I just want to make sure I'm on the same
page. Yes. I think also, though, it is important just to note the short amount of time between the time that we had a meaningful case plan and the time that the permanency petition was filed. Again, that is part of what we have to deal with when it comes to permanency timelines, but we have to take into consideration how short of a timeline that was, because again, it just underscores that we need to do this in a timely manner and that the department had already made up its mind regardless of what father was going to do.
Could you clear up something in the record, because it's just not clear to me, and it's about the domestic violence programming. There's some suggestion that that was a condition of probation already, and so could have been completed earlier, but was not, I mean, independent of this, the whole custody issue.
Yes, so it is my understanding that there was a domestic violence programming requirement through a separate criminal matter. However, I think it's also important to note that this didn't become a court-ordered case plan component until, and this is sort of unclear to me too, until at the earliest, the end of March, but it appears to be even later than that. So sure, yeah, he was supposed to comply with it as part of another court order. No one is disputing that. But he couldn't have known that he was going to be held to that, to complete that in time for this case, until there was a court order or a caseworker or someone telling him that he needed to do this. That didn't happen till late in the game. And then he only had so much time in order to complete it. So to have that held against him is really unfair in this case, even though Your Honor is correct that it was ordered in another case.
I have one question back to the assessment as a placement option. Does the statute, does it matter whether a parent, non-custodial parent, says, I want this? In other words, your focus on he conveyed that he wanted that at the start. How does that factor into the obligation?
I don't think a parent needs to say they want to be a placement option. I think it is the department's duty to inquire as to whether the parent wants to be a placement option. It's their obligation under the law.
Has due diligence in,
yes,
in doing that. And I guess the question, and maybe on rebuttal, I guess the question for me is there due diligence by a parent who's not, I mean, in assessing, and taking due diligence by the agency if there is a parent who's not coming to court, who is not, you know, I guess trying to set up visitation during that time. I don't know if I see that. So let's leave aside whether they say it or not. What does the county have to do when a parent is not sort of present, like I during those 6 months? So we can talk about that on rebuttal.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Mary Lynch with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, representing respondent Hennepin County Human Services, the Child Protection Division. I would like to primarily direct my remarks today to my understanding of what the court's asking about. I don't intend to waive any arguments. I would say that very importantly, the department does have an obligation to be available and to consider a non-custodial parent. First of all, and this is a somewhat unique case in that this the contact between the department and the agency happened shortly after a different district court had decided specifically that this father should not have custody of this child, awarded sole legal and physical to the mother, and awarded the mother supervised visitation only at the mother's discretion. So it's a different case than a lot of cases that we see. That said, the department agrees that the agency has the responsibility to assess and be available to a parent to understand whether or not that parent wants to engage in the issues involved in this child's life. Yes, it is for placement, but it's also for growing a relationship if that's necessary. Which would have been necessary in this case since the appellant had cared for the child for such a brief period of time, and to address whether or not there's any other issues that might interfere with the relationship. So the agency does have that obligation. The agency does not have a linear, there is not like a linear process set up where the agency has to first rule out the father before moving on to other planning. Concurrent permanency planning takes place always on a variety of parallel tracks. The agency has to consider those tracks, the court, the guardian ad litem, and the others involved in the case, which significantly, again, in this case, a unique factor, is that the mother was engaged in concurrent permanency planning. The mother who had that sole legal and physical custody after litigation was engaged in permanency planning. And in that process in late 2022, with the agency in the concurrent permanency planning, this her plan B, as it were, was for her mother to have all of the siblings. That is true. The agency did work on that, and that became sort of the first choice for all of the siblings. That does not mean that the agency didn't go on yet another parallel track of considering and being engaged with the father.
So can you speak to I think the argument is, oh, this should have happened in July, when that should have started, the assessment process should have started then, and it didn't, and that would have provided, you know, a more meaningful case plan and time to complete it, et cetera. So how did the county exercise due diligence in its assessment obligation? And if we sort of start in July and talk to me about that, why you think due diligence is, it was given, and how did it get to in the point that the court actually ordered assessment? I mean, I guess that presumes that that assessment did not take place previously to that. In January, it was ordered. So talk to me about the due diligence and why the appellant is not wrong that there was not due diligence.
I think that what the court ordered was, and I might be wrong about this, but my understanding of what the court ordered was that the department consider the father for placement. Okay. That was not saying that the department had not been engaged with the father and had not been involved in via engagement by assessing the father.
Okay.
The child protection social worker was, so there was a call, I do agree, there was a contact between a financial worker and the appellant in shortly after the out-of-home placement began in June of 2022. I think the contacts were in early July of 2022. And that information was passed along to the child protection social worker, who's the primary worker. That child protection social worker had a phone contact almost immediately. I can't remember if it was the exact same day or not, but very quickly with appellant. At the time of trial, testified that, you know, the child protection social worker was engaged with appellant, was available to appellant, and was attempting to determine whether or not appellant was wanting to engage. At the same time, and this was by the fall of 2022, the agency was receiving information, learning about the family, all of the family, not just this one child, but obviously where appellant has, the appellant has his own separate set of rights regarding his child. And was learning about what was going on with that family, about the primary custodian, which is the primary duty. The one thing that is linear is the department has an obligation to return the children to the custodial parent, if at all possible. So was engaged in that process, was learning about the fathers, was learning about appellant in specific, understood, was coming to understand the history of domestic violence, was aware of a no-contact order between the mother and the father. And was working on understanding all that. So I would say that whether or not you put the label assessment on it, the agency was exercising due diligence and being available for engagement.
Counsel, a couple of things. By fall of 22, it was pretty clear of his interest, correct?
It was clear of his interest in the case, in the situation. I don't know what it was clear what that interest entailed.
All right. But he points out in... his brief that there were conferences, and including a family group conference he wasn't invited to in November of 22nd.
Yes.
Wouldn't it have made sense to bring him in?
I believe there's testimony from the child protection social worker that at that time the mother, who is the custodial parent, specifically did not want him involved, and that was the reason why the department did not move forward on that basis.
All right. The appellant also points out that the county never visited or assessed his home.
That is accurate. The child protection worker did testify. The child protection worker, again, was hoping to understand the level of engagement that appellant intended to provide.
Okay. You can see why the appellant would view this as kind of a done deal in terms of the grandmother being the choice. Comment on that?
I think he didn't testify to that exactly, frankly. The department did not file its permanency petition until May of 2023, which was, so if this fix was in December, why didn't the department file it then? I guess the department did engage, continued to be available to appellant, to provide him information, provide him with Zoom links to the hearings. It continued to explain, the child protection worker continued to explain that she wanted him to engage in the court process essentially as a proxy for showing that he wanted to get further involved in this case and make himself available for it. The court did authorize or order specific elements of the case plan over that then made appellant obligated to comply with that, which is perhaps a little bit unusual given that he was not a custodial parent, but the court did authorize the elements of the case plan. The agency actually asked for the domestic violence to be included at the beginning, but the court wanted, instead ordered the agency to determine what was going on with the rest of appellant's court cases,
in a different jurisdiction and with probation on his criminal case to understand whether or not domestic violence programming was required, what was going on there. And when the department, in part after the department reported back on that, then the court did make the domestic violence part of the case plan that the court was authorizing for appellants. So, you know, this is how it's supposed to work, right? In a child protection case, the district court has some unique roles, and one of them is oversight, and oversight of the department's compliance with the various rules and structures, and the district court did that. I think the district court was, you know, actively involved and was appropriately holding the department to task, and that does not negate anything that happens after that. To sort of structure any sort of failing that would lead to requiring reversal on the district court doing its job just kind of defies the whole structure of child protection. We don't concede that that there was a timing problem or a timing gap, but even if there were, appellant had from that January 2023 until September 2023, and the trial didn't actually finish for, I think it was additional 2.5 months after that, to engage. The district court did specifically, you know, found reasonable efforts in its amended findings and did talk about, you know, talked about the domestic violence, the volatile behavior, and the other behavior that made him unavailable for being an adequate parent. Persisted and specifically talked about it was unlikely that appellant was going to be, you know, rejected appellant's implicit argument that he could do this if he had gotten different services by saying he'd been ordered to do the domestic violence since, I think it was May of 2022 in a different case, hadn't done that yet, had only just started. Also of note is that appellant consistently asked for unsupervised visitation, which the district court did not feel was appropriate and continued to order that supervised visitation take place. So the district court's job in a child protection case is always a blend of what is happening now and projecting into the future. And the district court did clearly consider what was happening at the time throughout the trial and then prior to that and looked forward into the future and did not think that it was likely that appellant was going to be in a position to effectively parent. And then, because it's a four-part test, it's four different things, the court also did a robust best interest analysis about the needs of this particular child in the context of her life, in the context of her relationship with appellant, and what her situation was at that time and then going forward. So the court made specific reasonable efforts findings, the district court did, whether or not and found specifically that the department provided reasonable efforts on the whole by the time of the end of the trial. It is not an abuse of discretion. There's not a clear error in the facts, and the court did an analysis considering both what the services were and this kind of timing factor that appellant is talking about today. Even if the court had found no reasonable efforts, it is possible, I think, to do a transfer of custody, but that is clearly not what we're talking about here. In the context specifically of the history that this family brought to the child protection case, specifically appellant's issues, and then what was going on during the period of time that the district court was open. I would also note that I think I've said this before, but the department did not ignore appellant. The department was available, took phone calls from appellant, provided him with ways to be involved prior to this coming to court in January of 2023, and followed up, you know, engaged with him at the level that he was engaging. And the department did continue to do that. And then once he did engage, the department did move into a different mode. And I think that is not, does not show that the department did not discharge its duty, did not actively engage in its duty to assess him and even go further to consider whether or not he could be involved in this child's life. I would also just say that overall, as I mentioned before, I think the district court conducted a robust best interest analysis, did consider reasonable efforts relative to best interest and relative to all the factors that the court needed to consider, the four factors the court needed to consider in doing a transfer of custody, heard a number of witnesses and assessed a large number of exhibits. It's clear that this was a careful decision, and this was a careful decision regarding appellant. And based on that, it would be our contention that there was no abuse of discretion, and we would ask this court to affirm and allow this child's life to go forward, hopefully to involve her father, which is what the which is what the district court projected, believed that the custodian would facilitate and support that relationship. But none of that, that was all because it's well supported, no abuse of discretion. That's what should happen for this family at this time. Unless the court has further questions.
Appears no. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes.
Your Honor, I'd like to start by addressing your question, but I want to make sure that I'm actually answering your question. So what I will say is that my understanding under the law is that what needs to happen to assess a parent, a non-custodial parent, is the county needs to first locate that parent, identify that parent. That was not an issue here. Father reached out. He was engaged. He was reaching out to the department. At that point in time, the department under the law should have asked him whether he wanted to be a placement option if there was any question. And they should have probed a little bit further in order to determine what, if any, services he might need. This needs to happen regardless of where he's located and regardless of whether he's coming to hearings. We have cases where there are parents, non-custodial parents, living out of state. And somehow, in those cases, or at least in some cases, there are efforts made to assess whether that parent is able and capable of caring for the child. For some reason, that did not happen here. He needed, regardless of...
Was there a distance factor here?
There was a little bit of a distance factor. Father does live in Duluth, and so there was a little bit of a distance factor. There also, to the extent that the department was requiring him to come down to the cities, I think it's pretty clear from the record later on when it comes to visits, the department was providing funds to allow him to do that. I think the record shows that Father maybe was not able to come down to the cities all the time due to the cost involved with that. And so, of course, that is an added element of what is going on in this case. And, Your Honor, I don't know if I answered your question, and like I said, I wanted to make sure that I am answering your question. So if there's anything else on the assessment piece, I'd like to address that. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I also want to address the opposing counsel's argument that the court ordered that father needed to be considered as a placement option for his child. That is what the order says. That is the order from January and I believe from March. Those appear to be the same things, right? Under the law, you need to assess and determine whether they're willing and capable. And then if they're not, provide a case plan. If we're assessing whether he can be a placement option, I think that's the same idea. Is he capable of being a placement option? And if he's not, what do we need to do to get him there? So I don't know that even though the court didn't use the language from the statute, that that means the court is talking about something different. So I just wanted to point that out. I also would note, opposing counsel argued that the district court did make conclusions and did adequately assess in its order the timing issue with when the department really engaged with father. I would argue that the order, while the court makes some findings as to the timeline generally of what happened, in the actual analysis at the end when we're talking about the four factors that need to be considered for the transfer of custody, it doesn't show up in the analysis there. The focus on the reasonable efforts there is what services were provided to father. It does not consider this timing issue, this due diligence of when the department actually engaged with father. I think the fact that the court overlooked that in its final assessment is an error of law, and I think that that needs to be readdressed by the court.
So what's the impact of that? Because there are these timelines. The child was already, even prior to the CHIPS proceedings starting, apparently living with maternal grandmother. So what's the impact of that practically? I mean, what's a court to do given the timelines in the statute?
In terms of its assessment and its order, or I'm not sure if I'm understanding.
In terms of coming up with a a final determination of permanency.
Sure,
for
and
yet the purposes of this proceeding.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is challenging with the timelines, of course. We're always up against the timelines. I think in this case, when it comes to the final four factors that the court needs to consider, best interest, whether the parent has the ability to use the services, reasonable efforts, and then whether the conditions have been corrected, I think if there are no reasonable efforts, we need to reassess all four of those factors in light of that determination. And so I'm asking this court to reverse, saying there weren't reasonable efforts, and return it back to the district court to reassess in light of that finding, in addition to adequately assessing father's ability to use the services to correct the conditions, given that he was engaged.
Thank you both very much for your briefing, for your arguments. The case is submitted, and we'll have a decision out in the expedited statutory time frame. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Please rise.